This is James from Survivalpunk.com back with another episode. And this one should be a fun one. I was hoping to get Catch Hill Mike on this episode. It was a weird weekend. Couldn't get him on. We are horrible at scheduling these podcasts. So we'll have to figure something out. Some definitive time schedule to get him on. I have heard from y'all that you enjoy the episodes with Couch Potato Mike. So personally, I enjoy recording with Couch Potato Mike. It just makes it more fun on my end. Not that I don't enjoy doing these solo podcasts. I just have more fun with my co-host here. So I will definitely try to get Couch Potato Mike back on the show for the first time of the new year, I think. Yeah, I don't think he's been on one in 2018 already, and it may very well be the second month of 2018 by the time he is on it. And we need to backlog a few podcasts and schedule them to auto go out. March is going to be a very rough time podcast-wise with me tying the knot. Mike will be going to Florida right after I get married. So, there'll be at least 2 weeks where we can't really get together. And, you know, it's with moving Serenity and Skylar in, last minute building of, you know, Skylar's room. It's going to be a hectic month. So it'd be fun times. I will try my hardest to make sure that there's not a bump in the podcast, that podcasts are recorded ahead of time. Really, you know what? I want to get some more interviews going, and I need to test out the software to see if it works on my new laptop that I have here, which I've not done. So I may be asking for people to call in and just chat on Skype to do some testing. That way, you know, I'm not wasting an interviewer's time. You know, it's just me chatting with one of you, recording it and seeing if it plays back without a hitch, or if I'm going to have to buy new software, or if software I was using, Pamela, has been sketchy at best recently. So may have to find a new solution. I don't know. I think that's all really the upfront housekeeping. There's Survival Punk Army. I do appreciate it. If you go to survivalpunk.com, join the Survival Punk Army. Join at, $5 a month is the cheapest, $50 a year. There's different packages, and it all helps the show keep going. I actually am a big fan of the $5 a month subscriptions. I've said it before. I really like that short, small, reoccurring payment. You know, and when the podcast comes out regularly scheduled, you know, it's a good deal. So I appreciate it. If you have questions, concerns, or calls for the show, you can call the call line. It is area code 615-657-9104. I don't believe I have any calls for this week. I need to check the backlog. Some of them may have been stuck in there for a while. So there's that. So the number again is 615-657-9104. And you can leave a voicemail with your questions, concerns, show topics. I do actually generate a lot of show topics from you, the listeners. You ask me questions, and sometimes those questions I'm like, well, that would make a really good show to share my opinions, beliefs, thoughts, thought processes with more than just a single person. I had this actually happen a few times recently where I've got, parts of this episode. I was actually scripting parts of this episode when a listener messaged me and was like, hey, what about this? And I'm like, I literally had the app up where I was writing down my thoughts on the same thing. So I was like, man, great minds and all that. So, and then I had another listener ask me what I thought about the libertarian open borders, closed borders thing. And really the bigger sort of underlying question there is, why is the liberty anarchist community so fractured and full of assholes? I mean, it could be a great, strong community with lots of positive influence on the world. And instead, they're just calling each other assholes and, you know, pulling stupid high moral ground, and nothing gets accomplished. They live in ridiculous fantasy lands with, like, well, this is the way it would work in Libpar. Well, we don't live in Libpar. You libtard? I mean, come on now. You know, and if you, how about half the time when you try to argue with people like that, debate them, when you try to debate with them, they don't, they quote the tired and true sayings over and over. Well, blah, 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 blah. They don't make any sense. And then when their arguments continue to not make any sense, they just resort to attacks and name calling because they got nothing else at that point. Which is when I stop arguing. If your argument is so weak, you have to resort to name calling and personal attacks on the person, I don't have time for you. So, something about that, that'll be a show topic very soon. One more thing before we get on to today's show is, and I need to get some out, actually, I need to get a batch out this weekend. If you go to iTunes and you leave a rating or review, and then you email me, james@survivalpunk.com, with your username you use on iTunes or Stitcher. For you Android people, it's a little hard to leave a review on iTunes if you're an Android device user. Like, you've got to download it on a computer. If you don't have a computer, then you're kind of fucked. It's annoying, and I don't really care for it. But if you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher, either one, I will mail you a sticker. You just send me an email with your address, your username, so I can go check and confirm the review. Not that I believe any of you are liars, but just in case. And then I'll send you a sticker. Eventually, you'll get one. Eventually. I got two I need to get out in the mail real soon. And with that, let's get into the main show topic this week, which is, I'm calling it eating for the apocalypse. Eating for a disaster, food in a disaster. I'm along those lines. I like throwing in an apocalypse, eating in the shit hit the fan, whatever. But I got to thinking about this in a sort of roundabout, circumvent way, which was the foods that people eat, what's considered delicacy, what's considered poor common man foods, those things have changed drastically over the centuries and millennia. So what I'm talking about here is, like, I believe it's the 16, 1700s. Could be wrong on the exact time date. For you historians, you may know this off the top of your head. And start screaming at the radio, the earphone. But lobster used to be a poor man's food. I'm trying to Google this real quick. Yeah, I mean, basically, it's a big spider from the sea. So, let's see. While today it is considered a delicacy, lobster was once a poor man's food thanks to its overabundance. People quickly became sick of the shellfish and only fed it to animals, prisoners. Prisoners. And those prisoners and independent or indentured servants. However, lobster became a popular luxury food in the late 1800s. So yeah, before the late 1800s, lobster was a poor people food. Which I find interesting. I personally don't like lobster. So it could be poor people food to me. but a lot of people love lobster, and it is so expensive. Which I kind of find it interesting that, you know, it is so expensive now, and that switcheroo. So not just lobster, other things have sort of switched over years, and I find that interesting. The other one was chicken. Chicken, so in like the 1600s, 1700s, around the same time period. So whereas lobster was poor man's food, chicken was a rich man's food. And now chicken is a poor man's food. Chicken is kind of some of the cheapest meat you can get at the store. You know, especially for like some of the big ones. So, you know, unless you're talking about weird offcuts, offal, that sort of stuff, chicken is cheap. Beef is fairly expensive. Pork is sort of middle of the ground. Chicken, turkey. Well, turkey is a little bit more expensive, yeah. But, yeah, chicken used to be reserved for rich people because it just wasn't as abundant. And that abundancy is a big part here. So I'm not really sure, is the lobster population that hurt that it's more expensive now? Or is it just, is the demand higher, so they've raised the prices? I don't really know. Don't really know, but that sort of got me thinking, you know, like the way that tastes have changed over time and where they're at right now and where they could go during, you know, shit hit the fan, like our eating will have to change. I mean, obviously, McDonald's will not continue to stay open and supply people with cheeseburgers during the shit hit the fan. You know, they may be some of the last places to go. But once the supply chains and all that fall down, depending on what kind of shit hit the fan we have here, you know, you're not going to get it. So if, God, you know, in some of the places with, you know, like bad weather, hurricanes, power outages and stuff, those places are going to close down, at least in a small short-term shit hit the fan. If all you eat is McDonald's, you literally can't get your food. You know, and that's a real thing. That does happen. So in a much larger scale shit to the fan, you got to imagine these fast food restaurants, you know, would go away quickly. And sadly, a lot of people don't eat real food anymore. They only eat fast food, which is a whole different show, my friends. I'm going really long on this first part here. But anyway, the tastes have changed over time, and what you may consider to be subpar food, cheap, poor food, stuff that you won't eat, like lobster was, you know, is could be a very good food. At least here in the West, in America, we have this weird mentality of, like, food may be fine, but we have mental issues with it that keep us from eating it. And later on, we'll talk about insects, which in many parts of the world are a real part of people's diet. Like, a very consistent, you know, substantial part of a person's diet comes from insects. We don't do that in America, and it's not that it's not a viable food source. It's a mental hang-up and a stigmata that we have here in the West. So, that's my next thing, actually. Let's go right into it. What a good segue on my part. I've eaten bugs before in several ways. I don't really have that whole stigmata of bugs being gross and inedible. There are some you have to watch out. Not every bug is edible, but for the most part, humans evolved to eat insects. Like, it's a part of our omnivore diet. You know, it's not something we can't eat. There are poisonous, toxic ones that we can't eat, but for the most part, a lot of them are edible. And not that bad even. Like, there's a grub worm in South America that tastes like bacon. And if we could get some of that exported, man, I would try that. You know, and It's not just like eating, you know, like if you watch the survival shows, they pick up a grub and just start chewing on it and you see it squish out of their mouth for drama. There's a lot of ways to prepare them that you won't even notice you're eating an insect. Years ago, several years ago, early 2000, like 12 or something. I really could have used a cup of coffee instead of a cup of tea. I reviewed a product called Exo Cricket Flour Bars. They were a protein bar made from a company that made these bars from cricket flour. So they would dry and grind crickets into a flour, and they'd make that into a protein bar. Kind of similar to like a Laura bar, if you ever had one of those. They weren't bad at all. I mean, I tricked... So when I did the review, I did it differently than I would normally do a review. I didn't just try all of them and tell you my thoughts on them. I wanted to help the company spread their message of, you know, bugs as food. They're not that bad. You know, they're perfectly fine. And just sort of trying to help them, help people break their stigmata that bugs can be tasty. So I tried all of them, but I also split them. Like, I had other people try them. I'm like, hey, try this protein bar. And I got, you know, several people to try them. I got Mike and his family to try it without telling them what it is. I cut it up in little pieces. I'm like, here, everyone try this. They all ate it. Then I'm like, oh yeah, that was made of crickets. What? Yeah, it was made of crickets. And without a hitch, everybody enjoyed it. My CrossFit coach at the time, Nick, said it was actually too sweet. It was like the apple cinnamon one or something. He's like, he'd rather have just like a meat bar over sort of like a sweet fruit bar, because it was like crickets mixed with like fruit stuff. So, you know, and that's a personal thing. Like, I kind of agree. Like, I would have preferred a meatier kind of bar over a fruitier kind of bar. Just me. Like, maybe use the cricket flour as a binder of, you know, like buffalo meat or something. It would have been interesting, but not so much. So I had everyone try it. Everyone liked it. There were some, Mike and his daughter Fiona had some adverse reactions afterwards. Not adverse as in sick, but just like, oh, you made me eat crickets, you know, and oh, I can't believe that. But before that, this is no problem. They enjoyed it. So that, you know, I've eaten off of Amazon and some like specialty stores. You can get like different flavored mealworms. Pretty good. But the thing is, there's a lot of things you can cook with insects to basically not even know you're eating insects. To grind them up, make different kind of things out of them. And I did an article once on crickets, and I do believe they're some of the best yield protein, like, ratio between food to protein output. So the amount of food you have to eat, feed them, over the amount of protein you get out of them is like the best ratio you're going to get. So I've thought about small scale cricket farming for the shit hit the fan myself, actually. Maybe if I can start breeding some of those bacon grubs here in America, that might be a way to go. I might be, you know, a bacon grub seller. James the bacon grubber. Anyway. So yeah, I would say now while times are good, do some experimenting. You know, go kick over a log and eat a grub. Try foraging for some insects and preparing them. One time I actually battered and deep fried a grasshopper. Totally good. Because when you batter and deep fry something, it only tastes like batter deep fried. I mean, it doesn't have a flavor besides the batter. So it tasted good. I would do that again. So, you know, the people are like, oh, I'd never do that. And it's just a mindset. So I would rather, we'll talk about that later. I'd rather you try it now, you know, and try to break that mental stigmata that we have here in the West. Another one, and I heard about this. I became really obsessed. I have these weird obsessions I go through. My mouse is upside down, so I can't control it. With the Townsend's YouTube channel, watching their 18th century cooking videos, and they mentioned that they're like, is there any other recipes you've come across that you won't do? And a whole category of recipes that they won't do that a lot of these old cookbooks tend to cover is covering up the off smell. So something that they had to deal with before refrigeration, which, you know, doing the shit at the fan won't really be refrigeration. We'll have to use some of the alternative methods we've learned, is dealing with the off smell. So keeping meat fresh without refrigeration, not really that easy to do. There's tactics, you know, there's a way to preserve food. I've covered that in podcasts before. We'll try to find it and link it in the show notes. But cooking with food that was starting to go off was a concern of our early ancestors, and they had ways of dealing with it. So I don't know any of those methods because they weren't covered, but finding them out and covering them up. So learning how to deal with that, how to pull out some of that off-putting smell so that you still have good food. I'm assuming you want to cover it with some pretty heavy flavors. This is not one of those times where you want the meat flavor to shine through. So, like, if you have a good cut of steak, you know, salt and pepper, call it a day. There's no real need to cover it up and do all these fancy things. You don't need to make the French and cover it with a sauce and all these seasonings. Just let the meat flavor itself shine through. That's why I'm not a fan of A1 sauce at all. If you feel the need to drown your beautiful steak in A1 sauce, you are either an idiot with no palate or the steak is not cooked well. You did not get a good quality cut of steak, did not properly season it with only salt and pepper, and did not cook it well. It's your fault. Either your taste buds are fucked up, or you cooked it wrong, or you cooked a bad steak. Otherwise, you don't need that. Now, if your steak has started to go bad, then it's a good time that you could doctor it up, you know, get some good, strong flavors to overpower it with. Let's see if I can even find anything on it. I'm sure I won't find anything good. No. I will. I will have to do some research on this, and maybe just share it in the Survival Punks group or something. And no, I mean, for one, you're gonna want to cook it thoroughly because it has gone bad. But that's one of those things where I would think high heat. I'm thinking stews and stuff, you know, to make sure it's thoroughly cooked, break down all of the bad things in it and get a good thing. So word of warning, I'm not encouraging you to go eat bad food. This is for, you know, theoretical discussion only. I'm not a doctor, not encouraging you to eat botulism. But, and if you know of anything, leave it in the comments, you know, let me know. Let me know how you deal with the off-putting smell. But I'm really thinking that you're going to want to cook it hot and long and use some strong flavors to cover it up with. And that's if it's, so that's if it started to go bad and you're trying to deal with some of the off-putting smell. I'm not recommending you cook rotting meat. At that point, you probably need to get rid of it. Use it as bait to catch something else to eat that's not rotted. But, yeah, I would cook it well and use a strong flavor on that. So anyway, let's move on. Eating expired food. So this is along the same line, and but not quite, though. This I'm talking about mostly canned food with expiration dates. So talked about it before. Just want to briefly go over it once again, that the expiration dates are... they're willy-nilly. They're made up by the companies. They don't... I mean, obviously, if you have a can of mustard greens and they go out January 25th, 2018, January 26th, 2018, they're not going to automatically start spouting botulism. Doesn't work that way. It's a guesstimate on when the quality of the food will degrade. Generally, if there's nothing bad in the can at the time and it stays sealed, the food isn't going to go bad. It will simply, usually it loses texture. It will just become mushier and mushier and blander and blander. The nutritional value will also decrease. The nutrition will start to degrade over time. And it'll become less nutrient dense. So you're basically just putting in bland, flavorless mush to take up stomach space. But it's still edible. By no means has it become toxic if your can is not compromised. That's the number one thing. Uncompromised can, perfectly fine. Dented, rusted, not worth it. Throw it out. But as long as the can is in good shape, then I wouldn't even worry about it. And other things, I need to do an experiment. I have some Hormel Complete Meals that are, at this point, fairly long expired. Maybe even like 5 years expired. So I'm going to open one up and give it the old sniff test, which... besides the whole cooking the off-smelling stuff I was talking about before, that's your key. Like, if your nose is like, nah, don't eat that, bro, usually trust your nose. You know, things like cabbage is perfectly healthy and tasty, but smells atrocious. I actually, as well, find the smell of pork rinds to be atrocious, but I like pork rinds. So, for the most part, trust your nose. It was evolved to keep us from eating bad things, so generally trust it. And don't worry about expired food. Don't worry at all. I would say making sure you're on top of your can rotations, and, you know, if you know you're not going to do, like, try donate to a homeless shelter, and then replace it with copy canning. But then just don't worry about it either. This next one is kind of interesting, and I felt that I needed to cover it in a serious discussion about eating and the shit hit the fan. And that's, you can go a fairly long time without food. It's a weird sort of stigmata of our modern society where the eating so many times and the constant snacking, like the snack mentality, like it's a $1 trillion industry on people constantly putting stuff in their mouth. And it's definitely a contributing factor to our overwhelming obesity problem worldwide at this point. The whole world is becoming obese. So going a while without food is beneficial. It has a whole lot of health benefits besides not, you know, getting too fat. Like the body doesn't worry about digesting food. It works about hormesis, where it goes and takes care of, bad hormesis, autophagy, autophagy, where it goes and deals with damaged cells. And having your body deal with damaged cells, it's a good thing, because cancer is damaged cells. So that's another thing. Fasting can have an impact on cancerous cells. That's a whole different rabbit hole. We're not going down it. We don't have time for that, and I'm not an expert. I think I've already misspoke a word when I said hormesis, so let's move on. So you can go a fairly long time without eating, and it goes right into the next thing. So by letting yourself have some real hunger, it makes it easier to eat some of the things that you otherwise would have issues with. And a quote from, I believe, Les Stroud or someone else. Someone else may have invented it, but that's hunger is the best sauce. And what that means is when you're hungry, a lot of things become edible that would not be edible otherwise. I don't know if the body physically shuts down taste senses, alters taste to make you think that what you're eating is delicious, or you just don't care anymore because you're so hungry. But you could have someone eat their least favorite, like will not touch it, gag reflex, horrible food ever if they haven't eaten in about a week, and they're going to scarf it down. Plain and simple. After like a week or so, like if you got some of those people out of Naked and Afraid from basically starving for 21 days, and was like, hey, I have some liver and onions here for you. You want some? And they would have just tilted the plate back and just swallowed the whole thing. Plate and all, fork, yeah, all of it's down. So yeah, hunger is the best sauce. If you think you're going to have trouble eating something, go into that meal hungry. I mean, go into it really hungry. Not like what we think in America here is hungry. Like, go into it really hungry. Like, haven't eaten for 3 days. Yeah, I could eat something. Yeah. So, same thing with kids. Oh, my kid won't eat that. Well, let him eat it or let him not eat anything at all. He'll eat the next meal then. And if he skips that one, eventually, like, oh, my kid would starve to death and die. No, they wouldn't, you dumb fuck. Your kid will not starve to death and die. They will not. Humans are pretty good at surviving. And if your kid does literally not eat and dies from starvation, you're the one in a million chance, and your kid is probably eating Tide Pods anyway. I mean, really. If your kid will skip eating steak and Brussels sprouts to die, then something's wrong there anyway. Sorry to be an asshole, but all of you people that are like, oh, my kids just won't eat unless I give them chicken nuggets and french fries. No, they'll eat what you give them eventually. Eventually, they will. You giving in is what gives them the power. Could go off on that too. Try foods now. So try some of these odd foods. Try some of your storage foods, your prep foods. Not just the stuff so I suggest you copy can, so you're eating what you eat anyway on a basis of what you're normally eating. But sometimes just break open those number 10 cans or even get some of the smaller cans of stuff and then try those. So that you find out how to cook them, what tastes good, what doesn't taste good. You may find out that dehydrated green beans, which are green beans and they're disgusting in and of themselves anyway, you may find out that they don't rehydrate well, but they're better in a casserole that you slow cook or something. So, finding that out now, so you're like, okay, so when the shit hits fan, you're like, okay, I totally know how to make the right thing with this powder and shit that I have. I like to try everything, so that way knowing now, and knowing what you like and knowing how to prepare it. I also like to do some sort of wild foraging and cooking with that now. So you're like, oh, doing the shit in the fan. Oh, I've got some dandelions and some nettles around the corner. I can go pick them, make a salad, make a dandelion nettle salad with some dressing that I got, and that'll be a meal right there. You know, oh, there's some persimmons down the hill in the field. I can pick those and make some persimmon lemonade. I don't know. I know where all the sumac trees around us are, so I can make sumac lemonade. So trying new foods now and experimenting with sort of the wild harvesting wild edibles. And, you know what? I haven't done a show like that in a while. Maybe when spring comes up, I'll do another wild edible show. We used to, on the show a long time ago, Mike would flip open to a random page in a wild edible book and talk about a random wild edible. I kind of like that segment, actually.
Whew.
Oh, I'm so tired. It's like the mid-afternoon sleeps, guys. Flavor burnout is real. I know when I was 15, 16 years old and lived with my dad, we were super poor, and there was a time period where I ate ramen noodles for every meal for like months. And I got to the point at the end where literally I could not eat ramen noodles. Trying to even like bring a sporkful to my mouth would just revolt and like convulsive throw up. Like I just literally couldn't eat it. So that's on the extreme end of flavor burnout, where like physically like could not eat it. But flavor burnout is real though. Like you get tired of eating the same food. Like there's like a rotational period, like where if it's your favorite food, you can eat it every day for a long time. And when I talk about diet stuff, I usually will mention eating the same meal a lot and then swap it out after a time, because people are like, oh, I can't eat the same meal every day, but they do. I mean, literally these people eat like the same thing every day anyway, but it's just a junk food. You know, it's like Cap'n Crunch cereal every morning for like 10 years. That stuff tends to be hyper palatable though, so it kind of cheats the nervous system of the sort of flavor burnout. With normal real foods, though, you will get some flavor burnout. And that leads us into the next thing, which is use different seasoning. So, like I've talked about before, there's seasoning combos, combinations of certain spices and herbs and seasonings that will completely transform one dish into something from another. So like if you take ground beef and you season it with salt, pepper, onion, garlic, and cumin, you get a Mexican taco-y flavor. But if you change that to salt, pepper, onion, garlic, ginger, and then a splash of like soy sauce, you get an Asian flavor. You know, same base things. Like you brown the meat and then you put in some random like vegetables chopped up in there and let them, you know, simmer in it and then add those seasonings. You get completely different flavor profiles with the same ingredients. All it takes is that little simple flavor ingredient mix up and you get a whole different flavor profile. And that's something to remember. Some of the foods, a lot of the foods people tend to store are bland. Like white rice by itself. If you had to eat bowl after bowl of plain white rice, you'd be smashing your head into the ground. But with those seasonings we talked about, and you know, you should be storing bulk amounts of seasonings that you do like, and they're cheaper that way. If you go to like an international market, they generally have fairly large containers of exotic spices, curry powder, different Asian powders and stuff, for cheaper than you'd get in like your normal grocery store for a tiny amount. You know, giant containers of curry at the international market is like $3, and you know, a little tiny shaker of it at Walmart is like $4.
That's another tip.
So yeah, store those large quantity seasonings. Try them now. See what you like. See what your family likes. You know, like maybe your kids hate rice, but when you cook it a certain way with, maybe you go to like, Amazon or like one of those bulk food supply shops and you put in some like, you know, mac and cheese powder and some butter and make cheesy rice. Maybe your kids love that shit. Maybe you just store boxes of mac and cheese. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but if they'll eat it and they'll stay alive with it and it's cheap, then why not, right? So, definitely try different spices. Store it and, you know, experiment. Don't just, like, not storing and planning how to cook your food and how to properly flavor your food is planning to fail. I mean, really, if you just, like, people are like, oh, I got like 1,000,000 pounds of beans and rice and, you know, no way to flavor those. Ugh. I mean, you may actually, flavor burnout may get so severe that you just can't even stomach eating those things and you have food stored and you're trying to like shovel it in and your body will make you throw up sometimes if it just doesn't want that in it at the time. So it's almost a survival topic to store spices, to change that flavor profile, to sort of trick the mental aspect of it into thinking, oh, this is not just plain beans and rice. I can eat this because it's not the same. You know, and having a variety of food stored, you will get tired of the same thing. So having an alternative to mix it up with is a good idea. How are we on time? 42 minutes. That's the end of my list, guys. So, that's all I have for this week. Next week I should have some good stuff. You know what? And like I said, I like it when people comment on the shows. I know some of you get them from iTunes or whatnot and you never actually visit survivalpunk.com. But do stop by every once in a while and leave a comment on the podcast. You know, so it's actually a two-way conversation instead of me talking in the microphone, you know, in my house. And, just, you know, I'm not lecturing to you guys. This is an open conversation. I learn as much from hearing back from y'all as you guys will learn from me. So, it's, you know, I never want to be that pompous survival asshole that's like, oh, I know everything in the universe. You know, I definitely delve into it long enough and practice it that I do know a lot, but it's also ever evolving. You know, like you think a lot of this stuff is based on very old skills and technology, but there's new things coming along all the time that changes our understanding of it. You know, at this point, when I first got into survival, people were still actively preaching the solar steel, where you dig a hole in the desert and put a little cup in the middle and then cover it with plastic and then put a pebble on top to make the water on the inside condensate downwards into the thing. At this point, I'm pretty sure everyone's like, yeah, it can produce water, but you will use more water building that hole and more calories than you will get out of it. You know, whereas storing clear trash bags to use on trees to get condensation that way is the best thing. You can walk around and cover 10, 20 trees and get tons of water. So that's a far better way to collect water. I'm not a fan of the solar steel. So that's my thoughts on that one. Maybe another episode on water should come up, but the last time me and Mike covered water, it was so, like, it's such a vital, important topic, but it was so boring, we just didn't care. So, there's that. And with that, this has been another episode of the Survival Punk Podcast. This is James from survivalpunk.com. DIY. to cook bad food, you guys.